Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of September 2nd, 2020. First, the COVID updates. From the Ford County Public Health Department, the Ford County Public Health Department is announcing 7 new cases. 2 of the cases are associated with an outbreak at a long-term care facility. Sadly, Ford County Public Health Department is also announcing 1 additional COVID-19 related death. Ford County has reported 110 total cases, and that's up from 101 on August 28. Of those 110, 95 have been released from isolation, 11 are in home isolation, 1 is hospitalized, and 3 have passed away. There have been a total of 3,458 people tested in Ford County. Of the cases, 61% are female, 39% are male. In age, 10 are under 20, 18 are between 20 and 30, 16 between 30 and 40, 12 between 40 and 50, 11 between 50 and 60, 15 between 60 and 70, 11 between 70 and 80, 13 between 80 and 90, and 4 over the age of 90. In Iroquois County, and this is dated August 31st, there are a total of 336 cases, 305 confirmed cases, 31 possible cases, 282 have been released from home isolation, 34 are in home isolation, 1 is hospitalized, and 19 have passed away. There, of the cases, 56.3% are female, 43.8% are male. There have been a total of 8,614 test results, of which negative results were 8,278. Total laboratory confirmed positive results, 305, and total probable positive results, 31. Now to the news, and all our news today is from the Ford County Chronicle. First story at the head of the page. Second PBL high school student tests positive for COVID-19. Paxton. The Paxton-Buckley-Lota School District posted a letter on its website on Thursday, September 3rd, stating that a student at PBL High School has tested positive for COVID-19. It is the second time an announcement came about a student at the high school testing positive for COVID-19. The first announcement came Thursday, August 27. The school district also announced on August 21st that a Clara Peterson Elementary student tested positive. The following is from the letter posted on Thursday, September 3rd. We have coordinated with the Ford County Public Health Department to promptly identify and monitor individuals who have had recent contact with COVID-19 positive individual to prevent further spread within our school and community. The school has notified the parents of those students who were in close contact with this student. The student did not attend school today. The health and safety of PBL students and staff is our highest priority, and we recognize the uncertainty and concern regarding the evolving coronavirus pandemic. We are following guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, as well as the state and local health departments for best practices and procedures to protect everyone's health. To prevent further spread of the disease, PBL High School is taking the following steps. Identification and notification of close contacts, that is, persons who were within 6 feet of a COVID-19 positive individual for 15 minutes or longer. Placing staff members and students who are identified as having prolonged close contact to this COVID-19 cases in quarantine following the return to work and or school flowchart. Close contacts will also receive a separate notification from the Ford County Public Health Department. Ongoing monitoring of students and staff for signs and symptoms of illness and evaluation of illness reports to promptly identify possible outbreaks. Conducting a deep clean and disinfection of the areas impacted by potential exposure to the COVID-19 virus. We will continue to enforce safe practices to prevent, promptly identify, and respond to potential COVID-19 cases as follows. Students and staff who are ill with COVID-like symptoms will promptly be placed in a separate supervised area away from others until they can be sent home. students are required to wear face coverings at all times, as previously directed and per school policy and state law. Staff are required to wear face coverings at all times while in contact with children and other staff in the facility. We are continuously sanitizing high-touch surfaces, including door handles, stair rails, sink faucets, etc. We have removed plush toys and other toys that cannot be properly or frequently disinfected. We are teaching students the importance of face coverings, social distancing, and proper hand washing. Students are discouraged from sharing personal items such as water bottles. Students are learning new ways to greet each other without touching. Students are reminded to avoid touching their eyes, nose, and mouth and to cover coughs and sneezes. Students will be taught to wash their hands frequently and properly following CDC guidelines on hand washing. July 28, 2020, guidance is based on current knowledge and is subject to change. As we receive more information from the Department of Public Health and other entities, we will implement additional recommendations and guidelines. As always, everyone should monitor their health and stay at home if they develop symptoms. Sick persons should contact their health care provider to determine if testing is needed. Anyone who develops severe symptoms should seek medical care immediately. If your child has had close contact with a known case of COVID-19, keep the child at home and notify your primary health care provider, your child's school, and your local health department. We are committed to providing your child and our staff with a safe and healthy environment. Thank you for understanding and ongoing cooperation with our COVID prevention policies and procedures as we work to help protect your children, your families, and our staff and their families. For any questions or concerns, please contact us at 217-379-3314. And the letter is signed, sincerely, Cliff McClure, PBL Superintendent. Our second story is entitled, More Charges Filed Against Paxton Man Accused of Sexual Assault of Child. Paxton. A Paxton man already charged in the alleged sexual assault of a child was charged Monday with additional felonies alleging inappropriate contact with a different child. Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian filed a 3-count criminal complaint Monday against Brandon J. Irish, including 2 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, a Class 2 felony, and traveling to meet a child, a Class 3 felony. The charges alleged the 33-year-old Irish inappropriately touched a child under age 13 on June 26, 2020, and traveled to meet the child after using an online service to lure them. On August 19, Killian charged Irish with 1 count of predatory criminal sexual assault of a child, a Class X felony, alleging that on July 4, 2020, Irish sexually assaulted a different child under the age of 13. Irish, who listed an address in the 600 block of North Market Street, remained Monday at the Ford County Jail on a $250,000 bond. Irish has been ordered to appear in Judge Matt Fitton's courtroom for a preliminary hearing at 11:15 a.m. September 9th. If convicted of the Class X felony, Irish faces a mandatory prison sentence ranging from 6 to 60 years. Next in business news, Chakra Studio closing at end of month. Paxton. Chakra Studio, which provides yoga, indoor cycling, and group fitness classes, announced that it plans to close its downtown Paxton facility at the end of September. In announcing the impending closure on a Facebook post on Sunday, Chakra Studio called it a difficult decision and thanked the community for its support. We hope you have enjoyed your time at Chakra Studio as much as we have enjoyed our time with each of you, the announcement said. Classes will continue as scheduled at the facility at 222 North Market Street through September 30th. We encourage anyone with remaining classes on a pass to use them prior to then, the owner said. One business closes, another opens. Mexican restaurant opens on Market Street in downtown Paxton. Paxton. Maria Torres visited downtown Paxton over the summer to buy some kettle corn, but she left with much more than just a yummy snack from the popular Mom and Pop's kettle corn stop. During her visit to the Ford County seat, The Plainfield resident found what she thought was a perfect spot for a restaurant she wanted to open. The next day, Torres obtained more information about the vacant restaurant building at 102 South Market Street that was available for rent. "It was like a perfect spot and the perfect restaurant," Torres said. "It was like it was waiting for me, like it was meant to be." Torres soon signed a lease to rent the first floor of the two-story building, which until January had occupied the Harvest Ale House, a restaurant and bar. And last Wednesday, August 26th, Torres opened her restaurant there. Owned and operated by Torres and her four sons, it is called La Hacienda Cantina. So far, business has gone well at the restaurant, which serves Mexican food via dine-in and carry-out. "The first day, the first 3 days, business was good. There were a lot of people coming in," Torres said Monday. "Today it's kind of slow, but I don't know if it's because it's Monday." Owning a Mexican restaurant has been a goal of Torres for some time now. "We decided we want to do something for the family, for my grandkids and my sons," Torres said. "So we decided to open the restaurant." A native of Mexico City, Mexico, Torres has lived in the U.S. for 45 years, and her father owns a tamale factory in Hammond, Illinois. Torres said her restaurant's tamales come from that factory. Besides tamales, La Hacienda Cantina serves tacos, burritos, enchiladas, fajitas, stuffed peppers, salads, and a dessert called churro, among other Mexican dishes. Once a liquor license is obtained from the state, the restaurant will begin serving a variety of alcoholic beverages, too. "The special is going to be margaritas," Torres said. La Hacienda Cantina is open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday and Saturday. It is closed on Sundays. The restaurant's website can be found at lahacienda-cantina.business.site. There is no menu on the site yet, but Torres said one will be eventually. Signage will also be added to the restaurant's front awning in due time, she said. "We're working on that." Also coming, Torres has moved from Plainfield to Paxson. Her father-in-law already lives in the area in nearby Rantoul, and Torres was actually visiting him when she heard about the popcorn shop in Paxton and decided to check it out. "I'm looking for a house in Paxton," Torres said. "I want to move here because the drive from Plainfield is like an hour and 40 minutes every day." Torres said the Paxton community has been quite welcoming to her and her family. "The people are super friendly. It's like everyone says hi to you," Torres said. "And it's so quiet, so peaceful. Every time I come to Paxton, it's like I came for a vacation." La Hacienda Cantina can be reached at 217-579-1122. Well, we've had one business close, one business open, and now Pueblo Lindo moving to a new, larger space on North Railroad Avenue. Paxton. By the end of this month, the Pueblo Lindo Mexican restaurant in downtown Paxton is expected to have a new home a few blocks to the northeast, and it will be bigger and better. "We're extremely excited. We can't wait," said Paxton restaurant resident Lupe Ribolo, who owns Pueblo Lindo with her husband Paulo. Since opening in October 2013, the Marshall Building at 124 West State Street, Pueblo Lindo has grown in popularity to the point that more space is now needed. With renovations also necessary at the restaurant's current location, the Ribolos began looking for another site to address both needs. They found one at 615 North Railroad Avenue. For most of the past year, the Ribolos have been completing a full renovation of a portion of the building's south side. Another portion of the building already occupies Elite Sport and Fitness of Paxton. "We expect to finish the project this Friday," Lupe Ribolo said Monday. "We did everything from flooring to the ceiling. It was basically completely gutted out." The new location features a dining room with a seating capacity of around 130, up from 77 at Pueblo Lindo's current site, as well as a separate banquet room with a seating capacity of up to 300. It also has a bar and a gaming room, unlike the current Pueblo Lindo location. It also has a parking lot rather than street-side parking at the current location. Robolo said the plan is to open Pueblo Lindo at the Railroad Avenue location by the end of September. "We're in a crunch time, basically," she said. Robolo said she and her husband realized they needed just a bit of a bigger space for the restaurant when it would become a little bit crowded and hot in Pueblo Lindo's current location on a busy night. "So we started looking around, just to be more comfortable," she said. "Once Pueblo Lindo opens in its new location, the existing restaurant on West State Street will close." Robolo said she has informed her landlord there, the State Building Street's building owner, Kevin Marshall, about the move. The Robolos recently extended their lease at the State Street building because they did not know when they would exactly move to the Railroad Avenue would happen, so finding another tenant there will be pursued. "We've been talking back and forth with Kevin Marshall, and obviously if we find another occupant, it will be much easier." Robolo said she has appreciated the support of the Paxton community ever since Pueblo Lindo, which is Spanish for beautiful town, opened 7 years ago on State Street. At that time, it was owned by Mickey and Miguel Robolo of Mattoon and Miguel's cousin, Arturo Robolo of Hoopston. Miguel Robolo is a cousin of Lupe Robolo's husband. "The community has been amazing," Lupe Robolo said. "They have really supported us with the takeout orders during the whole coronavirus pandemic. We've had some setbacks with this whole renovation at the new location. So money-wise, we're not where we want to be, but the community has been there and helped us a lot." From the state police, vehicle crash reported in Ford County, rural Paxton. The Illinois State Police reported a single vehicle fatal traffic crash on Illinois Route 115 at 1250 North Road in Ford County at 6:05 p.m. Wednesday, September 2nd. The vehicle, a 2001 Chevrolet S10, was driven by Dustin J. Graff, a 30-year-old male from Watseka. He is deceased. Preliminary investigation indicates the following occurred. The vehicle was traveling southbound on Illinois Route 115, approaching 1250 North Road. It entered the northbound lane, and the driver overcorrected back into the southbound lane. This caused the vehicle to roll on the highway. The vehicle then left the roadway to the east, continuing to roll. The vehicle came to a rest in a cornfield. The driver was ejected and pronounced deceased by the Ford County coroner. From Gibson City, Ford County Republicans host ice cream social. Gibson City. An old-time ice cream social was held in the pavilion at Gibson City's North Park last Saturday. Hot dog lunches were served for $1, and ice cream was also provided for $1. The purpose of the event was to encourage citizens to register to vote in the November 3rd election. Ford County residents were invited to the event for an inexpensive lunch and to meet and visit candidates for various offices up for election this November. Mary Miller, a congressional candidate for the 15th District, highlighted the event by discussing the need to continue draining the swamp in Washington, D.C. Sharing her background and family life, Miller told of raising her 7 children and now sharing the joy of 17 grandchildren. But her focus now is to help Washington, D.C. hold down taxation, protect the U.S. from illegal entry into the country, and provide support for law enforcement so that everyone lives in a safe environment. Miller is vying for a contested seat in Congress vacated by the retirement of U.S. Representative John Shimkus. State Representative Tom Bennett, a Republican of Gibson City, discussed the upcoming constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot. "It is called a fair tax, but there's nothing fair about it," he said. "It's a progressive tax." Bennett said political factions, and particularly Democrats, have tried since 1936 to pass a progressive tax. "It has failed every time," he said. In 1970, the state legislature rewrote the Illinois Constitution. In that Constitution, they set limits on taxation, including a non-graduating rate, which is a flat tax. That means regardless of what the rate is, currently 4.9%, low-income workers pay a small tax and high-income earners pay larger sums because the rate is fair for all, Bennett said. Several Ford County board members and village mayors were in attendance. The chairman of the County Republican Central Committee, Jeff Orr of Piper City, expressed the importance of all Republicans voting in the November 3rd election. Now we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of September 2nd, 2020. Margaret Louise Trowbridge Cox, Rantoul. Margaret Louise Trowbridge Cox, 86, of Rantoul, formerly of Paxton, passed away Wednesday, August 26, 2020, at her home. There will be no services. Memorials may be made to the family. Carol E. Ostendorf, Paxton. Carol E. Ostendorf, 98, of Paxton, passed away at 6:24 a.m., Sunday, August 30, 2020, at her home. A family graveside service will be held at the Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society, the Champaign County Down Syndrome Network, Paxton First United Methodist Church, or the Paxton Peace Meals Program. Ronald L. Williams, Roberts. Robert L. Williams, 72, of Roberts, passed away at 4:37 a.m., Monday, August 31, 2020, at his home. Private funeral services will be held at Bear Family Funeral Services in Buckley. Burial will follow in Oak Hill Cemetery in Watseka. Memorials may be made to the PBL School District or the American Lung Association. Sue Ann Harsha, Gibson City. Sue Ann Harsha, 69, passed away at 4:14 a.m. Sunday, August 30, 2020, at Carle Foundation Hospital with her daughter at her side. Funeral services were held Thursday, September 3, 2020, at the First Baptist Church in Gibson City, with Pastor Dennis Norton officiating. Burial was held at the Riverside Cemetery in Saybrook. Memorial contributions may be made to the First Baptist Church. May C. Anthonson, Gilman. May C. Anthonson, 87, of Gilman, passed away on Wednesday, August 26, 2020, at Norwich Gardens in Norwich. Cremation rites will be accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Onaga. Memorials may be made to the Parkinson's Foundation. Elizabeth Beth Lamai, Kankakee. Elizabeth Beth Lamai of Kankakee died on Wednesday, August 26, 2020, at her home following a courageous fight against cancer. A memorial service will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the American Cancer Society or to the donor's wishes. Bernice E. Wilkin, Milford. Bernice E. Wilkin, 96, of Milford, passed away on Friday, August 28, 2020, at Sheldon Healthcare in Sheldon. Graveside services were held Monday, August 31st at Sugar Creek Cemetery in Stockland with Ed Highfill officiating. Burial will follow. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Rolla Charles Dolph, Onarga. Rolla Charles Dolph, 75, of Onarga, passed away at his home on Saturday, August 29, 2020. Funeral services were held Wednesday, September 2nd at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park with the Bishop Anthony Ronstadt officiating. Private burial with graveside military rites was held Thursday, September 3rd, 2020 at the Danville National Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the National Desert Storm and Desert Shield War Memorials in Washington, D.C., or the Iroquois County Animal Rescue. We conclude our reading today with a column from Jim Nolan. Whither the Illinois GOP in a post-Jim Thompson world? The recent passing of Illinois Governor Jim Thompson, 1977 to 1990, begs the question, can the Illinois Republican Party ever again capture the governor's office? The only answer I can come up with is, unfortunately, not likely, but not impossible. Here's why. Jim Thompson served four terms, twice as many as any governor in Illinois history. He probably could have been elected to a fifth, though he was running out of money to do things for people. I was in and out of his administrations, from volunteer policy research in his first campaign to several troubleshooting agency directorships, never fixed a one of them, to drafting his fourth inaugural address. Jim liked people, all people, from the little guy to the big shots, from country folk to urban minorities. As with many politicians, he also wanted to be liked, and he was. He was smart, enjoyed negotiating, coming to a deal. His style was collaborative rather than combative. Jim attracted good people to run his agencies, and he let them do the managing. Jim believed in his Illinois. He wanted to build our state from Chicago skyscrapers and sports stadiums to downstate highways. Jim loved selling Illinois. He set up state marketing offices in big cities all over the world and enjoyed immensely taking delegations across the ponds to try to bring business back to Illinois. And he was successful, as with bringing Mitsubishi Motors to Normal, which is now Rivian Motors. Jim was moderate, even liberal. He was pro-choice, pro-union, pro-spending. He added lots of pension benefits for public employees, including doubling his own, yet put off paying for them. Conservative Republicans grumbled under the breath about Big Jim, but he was tough on crime with his determinate Class X long sentences, which they applauded. The Illinois GOP of 2020 would not be comfortable with Big Jim. The party is opposed to lots of things Jim was for: women's choice, unions, welfare, Chicago, spending, and taxes. The Illinois GOP of the present seems to be more comfortable exhorting voters to return to traditional small-town conservative values. And that is the problem for Republicans. The largely small-town downstate that lies outside Metro Chicago has but one-third of the state's votes and only leans Republican. Thus, the GOP cannot win statewide without strong support in the suburbs and by making at least some inroads into heavily Democratic Cook County and its Chicago. Cook County accounts for almost two-fifths of the statewide vote and in 2018 gave Democratic statewide candidates almost 3-to-1 majorities. Even more startling for old-time political observers, the Democratic candidates actually carried the once rock-ribbed GOP suburban Collier County. So it looks bleak for statewide wins for the Illinois GOP, though not impossible. After all, starting with Jim Thompson in 1977, Republicans held the governor's office for 26 straight years. To win, I think the following must be understood. Most political party organizations, including that of the Illinois GOP, has atrophied to near helplessness. Candidates must build their own volunteer organizations, and they must also find ways to reach voters. In statewide races across a state 400 miles deep and almost 13 million people, that requires big money, the commodity that has replaced parties. Second, a successful statewide Republican candidate will have to be either moderate on social issues like abortion and guns, or at least come across as a conservative whom voters can relate to, feel comfortable with, such as Ronald Reagan. In my central Illinois, I identify three GOP comers that might just put it together what is needed for statewide success: State Senator Jason Barrickman of Bloomington, U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger of Mantino, and State Senator Sue Reason of Morris, the latter two on the edge of the suburbs. All are smart, reasonable politicians who know how to work across the partisan aisle. True conservatives might want to get behind attractive U.S. Representative Darrell LaHood of Peoria. There are, I'm sure, other comers elsewhere in the state. Downstate candidates have additional challenges. First, they are outside the critical Chicago media lens. For example, Jim Thompson became almost a household word throughout the Metro Chicago area via the nightly news as a crusading, corruption-busting U.S. attorney. Second, downstaters are generally not privy to the company of the Chicago area Daddy Warbucks donors, that is, the tight-knit, near-billionaire community who have become the primary funders of political campaigns. The overwhelming Democratic dominance of Illinois that has developed since 2000 is not healthy. A Jim Thompson type of Republican might have a chance statewide. Other than that, it's going to be real tough. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.